Hello there. Thanks for watching or listening to VIP Boxing's Bell to Bell podcast. We're well into the 170s. I haven't got the exact number. That's how unprofessional I am. But there you go. If you're watching on YouTube or downloaded for a listen or on iTunes or Spotify, a review would be great. I don't know how the algorithms work, but it helps push the podcast. But please sign up to VIP's YouTube anyway. A lot of live boxing coming up on there the next few months. You know me, Steve Lillis, my co-host John Evans. This week we welcome, he's debuting it. Brilliant to have him on. Our producer Darren found this wonderful fella for a former boxing news editor. We'll say he's a writing don. Matt Christie, how are you, Matt?
I'm really good, mate. Yeah, it's good to be here with you both, two of my favourite people.
Good to see you. Don't see enough of you these days, mate.
Well, you know what? After 9 years as the editor of Boxing News, I'm still working in boxing. All right, for Boxing Scene, I've done bits and bobs for Sky Sports.
Yeah, see you.
And we've been working on our own podcast as well. It was, looking back on it now, I'm amazed I did it for that long.
When you think of the long time, because it isn't just, obviously, the occasions, I guess, you get to write and edit properly are a pleasure. It's the minefield, I guess, you have to walk through with one person don't like one thing, the next person, someone who liked something the week before, don't like it, just across the globe, I'd imagine, being such a, you know, well-read publication.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you'd never get any thanks or congratulations for writing a positive story or giving a certain bill 5 stars. But the moment you give something 2 stars, you flipping know about it, I tell you.
Oh, mate, yeah. It's like 9 years is a long, long time.
Hey, Matt, obviously you're not new to the world of digital because you're a great deal responsible for getting Boxing News online. But how have you found it now? Great team over there at Boxing Scene. How have you found the transition over and what are the major differences you've found?
They are, first and foremost, they're a great bunch. A great bunch, whether it's the people we got here in the UK, like obviously Tris, Declan Warrington, Elliot Wurzel, or some of the people out in the States, like your Eric Raskins, Kieran Mulvaney. They're all people I always had a lot of respect for before I made the move. I had already decided to leave Boxing News prior to kind of joining up with Boxing Scene. I think it's kind of it's really kind of going from what felt like a 24/7 job at Boxing News to just this constant rolling content. And as you know, John, you spent quite a bit of time over at Boxing Scene. You are under pressure to be updating that website pretty much every hour. So that is quite difficult. And just constantly being on top of everything. But I used to find it quite difficult when I was looking after, say, a magazine, to get everything in a magazine. You haven't got those boundaries, obviously, with a website like Boxing Scene, so you can report on absolutely everything. But yeah, for the most part, I am genuinely, hand on heart, thoroughly enjoying it.
Yeah, it's good. And I bet your family balance is better now. Do you find that, Matt? Even though you've got a young family there.
Yeah, it is. And I often say it now. I mean, when people say they want to get into boxing, if you are single with no responsibilities, that's half the battle. Because you need to give up pretty much every weekend to be on top of everything if you want to break into this boxing industry. Not recommending anybody does it really as a career, by the way.
I'm on the home stretch now. I'm on my last. I've worked it out. I've got 4 years left and I'm away.
Are you? How are you finding your new role?
Look,
your matchmaking.
You know what?
Mondays are his favourite day, Matt. He loves Monday.
It's not so bad at the moment because I've got no shows. The worst thing now is I've got about 12, 13 shows to match. I'm working hard on them. But it's okay. When it gets to fight weeks and you've got 3 shows on 1 week, it's hard. And yeah, working with a few boxers as well. It's good. It's good. But I'm on the home stretch, definitely. When 4 years, I'll still work with a few fighters and manage one or two, I think, then, to keep the brain active. But the matchmaking will definitely go in, I think it's about 4 years. June 8, June in about 4 years, whatever year, 29 that will be.
You've got the specific date.
Yeah. I know the show. Ian Wilson's got his 50th birthday show, St Andrew's Sporting Club. That's my last show.
It's like the doomsday clock, Matt. He's ticking down.
That is some forward planning. I like it.
It's a bit, hey, as I keep saying, sport's been very, very good to me. You know what? Moan about it, gets you down, your head's in your hands, but it's been kind to me for a lot of years. So I'm not going to be one of these people who, when they leave boxing, will be bitter and be slaughtering it. It's been very, a lot of it I don't like, but it's been very kind to me.
Yeah, likewise, likewise. I tell you what, though, Steve, not many people leave boxing. You do know that. I'm not convinced you're going to walk away in 4 years.
No,
not
in the sport. I'll still have a hand in working with one or with a few boxers, definitely. But I won't be sitting at the, you know, till 10 o'clock at night taking calls for different matches. And I've got a list here about all these shows to make over the next 2-3 months here. That's what will be going. I couldn't walk away because I don't want my brain to shrivel up and become inactive. There's not much there anyway. But anyway, tell what we'll do. We don't want to keep you all night, Matt, because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to talk boxing all night with us anyway, I dare say. But on bell to bell, John's a bit strict with his 3-minute rounds these days. You hear a countdown, and at the end of that, even if you're mid sentence, we zip it.
Right, fine.
Okay. So are you all ready, John, with what you got to do there in your abode?
All ready to go. High tech here, systems all set.
We'll start with you, John, and the girl that's causing hell, Ellie Scotney.
Yeah, I think it's about time Ellie Scotney got given a due. She's been at it now for a few years, turned pro during COVID, 10 professional fights, 4 world title fights and a European belt. Never fought for a vacant title and was well aware when she turned pro that she wouldn't have the profile that other girls get given and would have to box the toughest girls around. She's done it. I think she's getting better and better. There was flashes on Saturday night of what she can actually do for a couple of rounds. Just feels more comfortable in her own skin now. Well established as probably the best super bantamweight in the world and started finally talking up herself a little bit and calling for a fight with Skye Nicholson. I know it's something she's not been keen on doing, pushing her own cause and talking herself up, but she finally started to do it, realising that that's part of the game. And it just looks like the world's her oyster now. I think we see girls get a lot of credit, particularly in the higher weight classes, for beating not particularly talented opponents and belt collecting. But I think Ellie's done it the right way and should deserve be getting a bigger pat on the back than she actually gets.
Man.
I've always had a lot of time for Ellie Scotney. I mean, we all know here how talented she is. I think, forget about calling it women's boxing, I think in Britain she is one of the most talented fighters. She's got it all. It's almost like boxing 101 with how she fights. She can fight from distance. She's excellent in close. But I think one of the things aside from all of that is how charismatic she is. And she's kind of almost quietly charismatic, humbly charismatic, without ramming it down your throat. And I think it is. I agree with you, John. I think it's about time for liftoff for her.
Yeah. You know what? You both touched on there. You says John says she never had the profile of others. I can't believe people haven't taken to her. Because if you met, you know, I've got to know her through John knows her very, knows Ellie very well. I just find her such a warm person, genuinely warm. And when she says, hello, how are you? She's genuinely saying hello. But I saw her in Belfast a couple months ago and she's got that sweetness about her. And And even when you see her interview, she comes across so well, as you say, humbling, she doesn't trash talk. And I'm shocked that profile hasn't mushroomed already.
She's got a good sense of humour as well. Brilliant. I think she's funny.
Yeah, it's made for like a TV presenting role. But above all, she's got a fight. And when she's actually in a flow, as you said, Matt, it's not just women's boxing. She's a tremendous fighter. A sense of range and distance and angles and combination punching. It's there. There's not many people better in Britain. And I'm glad finally people seem to be clicking onto it and realising what she's doing. But it is going to take a big opponent and a big fight for her to get the just desserts. It's just the way it is. But I think when she does get there, she's more than capable of taking the opportunity.
Round two. I was thinking earlier over the weekend, coming back from London, what boxers might make a comeback in 2025? So I'll get your opinions, obviously, fellas. The one person I think we still might see again is Sonny Edwards. I think that last, you know, he's in corners now. It seems quite content. I saw him in December. But when he spoke after, there was obviously a lot going wrong before the Gallo-Yafai fight. You know, he changed trainers. And I think he spoke with a lot of emotion after that fight. Wasn't happy in the build-up. And I think being away from the sport on that side of it for a while, I think he'll realise in a few months he still has, he'll still believe he has something to offer, and there will be an opponent out there that will lift him to come back. And I wouldn't be surprised if Sonny was the big comeback of 2025.
I'm still surprised that he seems as genuine as he does about his retirement announcement. It was certainly one that I paid attention to in a way that with Tyson Fury, you kind of think, well, all right, we've heard this a million times before. I think other ones to throw in there, what about Errol Spence? If he was to come back and be successful, that'd be one heck of a comeback. But he's obviously having some problems. But I think you mentioned Tyson Fury. If he was to come back and have a good year, he'd be a contender for comeback of the year. Also Anthony Joshua. And is Lomachenko in the realm of coming back? Is he gone away? It's a bit of a contentious subject sometimes, isn't it? I know Daniel Dubois got some comeback of the year awards last year and people were like, he didn't come back, he was just making progress. And I completely understand that argument. But I'm going to say Errol Spence.
John. I think we're going to get a... I'm not sure it'll be a comeback, but I think Josh Warrington's going to be back in the ring before summer. I think I'm not sure if it'll be a long-term one or like maybe a farewell fight or something, but Josh Taylor as well, he's going to get a big fight this summer. I think we can call Josh a comeback. You know, he's not won for a little while and got soundly beaten, I thought, by Jack Catterall in an exciting fight in that rematch. And if Josh can come back and be successful, I think that will be a comeback, although... The rumours are that he's into a trilogy with Catterall, so we shall see.
Yeah, I think Josh, what did you say, Josh Warrington there, didn't you, John? I think he's
yeah, Warrington.
I think he's certain to come back. What is what there'll be for him though? Because you wonder, you know, if the rumours are true and Kakachi's going to fight Lee Wood, Kakachi won. That, you know, I'm guessing Lee Wood would walk away from boxing. I think he's on the home stretch. You can't put him in the Kakachi again. It's where he'd go, Josh Warrington.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, from seeing him recently, he is coming back. He is going to have one more crack at it. But like I say, it's just maybe he'll see how he feels and maybe it is one and done. But we will see him again, I think.
Round three, over to you, Matt. The future of sanctioning bodies.
Yeah, this is something that's occurred to me for a while. We were talking about it on the Opening Bell podcast earlier on that we recorded. And I just wonder, particularly with what's going on with the ring, and I think that there is almost an open goal for that to be the championship that everybody wants to fight for that to be the world title. But I think anybody that was familiar with what I used to write about boxing news knows that sanctioning bodies used to drive me around the bend. And it's not, it's just the fact that the rankings largely are nonsensical. You can really struggle for people to justify some of those placements. I've been at numerous ranking conventions over the years and I've watched people lobby to have to be up higher in the rankings. And you just go and ask for it and you generally get it, which to me, frankly, is ridiculous because all sanctioning bodies are privy to the same results that we are. Surely they can work it out for themselves what the ranking should be. But I do wonder, given that there is the odd noise of Terence Crawford do it, Miguel Cotto did it a few years ago, Canelo's done it, they're starting to ask exactly what they're getting for the sanctioning fees. And I think all it might take is a few of these big names to say, look, I'm not interested in fighting for these sanctioning body titles anymore. And then all of a sudden, they might become a little bit obsolete. What do you guys think?
I think with this Ring magazine and the way they're talking of leagues and stuff like that, you know, with Saudi and everything, and it's certainly going to become diluted. But, you know, we still don't see, that's going off the topic, what Saudi's long-term plan is for boxing. Is it going to be a 10-year thing and they go on to something else and the governing bodies come back? But if this Saudi thing and Ring magazines continues to snowball and grow, mushrooming out of sight, then they're going to become more and more diluted. But there'll always be something there for them. However weak and they become and cheap they become, I think they'll never ever go away, because there'll always be a promoter that will want to use them, even if they're, you know, who isn't, you know, connected with what might be going on in Saudi with Riyadh season.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a hell of a lot of kowtowing by the governing bodies to make sure that they are there in Saudi. I think they'll do whatever it takes to make sure that they've got a ringside seat. Maybe the titles will end up coming down the levels, you know, so yes, the big reaction show has become the Undisputed, and then the people who aren't involved with Riyadh or the people who are putting on their own shows that they're contracted to do, maybe they'll start relying on world titles, which will only diminish the quality of them. So future's uncertain, but I think we can be pretty sure that we'll do whatever it takes to keep on wetting their beak.
Round four. Over to you, John, and this mad super lightweight division in Britain.
Brilliant division. You know, the divisions change in strength, don't they, in Britain at the moment. Light heavyweights were really good for a while, but I think 140 is the division now. It's outstanding. Just go. You can pretty much go through the top 10. Jack Catterall, Josh Taylor, Dalton Smith, Adam Azeem, Jack Rafferty, Piers O'Leary. I know he's Irish, but I'm still classing him as being in from these shores. The number of fights that could be made going down the years, just phenomenal. On the world scene, I think the belt holders, it's all been a big turnover over the last 12 months. A series of beatable belt holders, people like Puelo, Hitchens and Richens. I think he's a good fighter, but I don't think he's outstanding. British fighters could dominate this division for a long time. I just think the strength in depth is outstanding at the moment.
Yeah, you know what?
What about Prince Patel?
I looked at the story on Box Rec this afternoon, man. He's number 5 or 6 in Britain because of all these belts he has pictures of. It. He Tanzanian championships, them are brilliant. They're lovely belts, actually. But I'd say I was looking at today, when you saw looking at domestically and after the names you mentioned there, and I know Box Rec ratings aren't the be all and end all, but you know. But I'm looking. Kane Gardner's number 16 on Box Rec, but he's beaten the new British welterweight champion Conor Walker. You know, guys, how far it's going down. You mentioned Jack Rafferty. There's Khalil Maggi's unbeaten. Brad Townsend. There's a lad in Essex, Louis O'Doherty, that's not bad. Who's going to be not going to be a world level, but he's going to get the British level. Even in them guys bunching up behind Jack Rafferty for the British title, there's talent.
Well, Reece McMillan's 16-1 and beat Kane Gardner, and he's been written off before Rafferty. So it's the people are at the top end of it. I think all those fighters from Rafferty up have all got European and beyond in them. It could be a real golden period, I think.
If you're going to make one fight there, Steve, with those top guys, who would you put against who? Smith, Azeem?
Well, Smith, Azeem's the natural, whether it's going to happen or what. I think there'll be two. I think Uncle Turkey will get together and everything, you know. Smith, Azeem's got to be the one, hasn't it?
There's an absolute banger there.
Go on.
Rafferty against Piers O'Leary.
Yeah. I think Piers O'Leary, is he fighting in April? Yeah, I mean, just thinking there. Yeah, look, you've got to go Azeem and Taylor. The needle's there, the promoters, you know, the hype that's going to surround it. I think that's the one. I'm sure it'll happen. Round five. People, unheralded punchers, boxers who are chinning people, stopping them, who have done it relatively unnoticed. I don't know who you guys have got. And I'd say what I like the look of. You've seen the match. I think you've been Matchroom, Jimmy Sainz.
Yeah.
Who is 8-0. Now, they're all inside the distance. Look, there's no one of note. But there's a couple high, really good roadmen. Omer Rodriguez, I think he's a Panamanian based in Spain. Dimitri Procunas. And he's absolutely wiped them out like no one else has before. And Jimmy's come along, and there's barely a word being spoken about him. And I find it really surprising that the Matchroom hype machine hasn't got behind him, given how he's blowing people over. If you think of like Sam Notes 8-0, the treatment he was getting, how Frank Warren and Queensbury was selling him, a and this is almost forgotten that he's going to he's on time, I think, to make it 10 out of 10 by stoppage in a couple of months.
Big one. Glamour division as well, middleweight, and we're desperate for the middleweights. Yeah, I've got a middleweight. Dr. Steelhammer, Shaquille Thompson, barely team on big shows, but a 6'3" southpaw who can whack. Now he's put his last three out at title level, a couple of scary knockouts as well, and the worst possible type of opponent to face. So, yeah, I like Shaquille Thompson, but Jimmy's boxing this Friday, isn't he, as well?
Yeah, he is, at that night, like that club music venue in the O2,
Who's he boxing?
Oh, forget now.
I bet it's got a Z in it.
Yeah. I'm just surprised he hasn't been given the treatment by Matchroom. You know, maybe they've got it planned. I'm not. Matchroom do a wonderful job at hyping their fighters. Is it far?
George Woodard stopping people as well on the same show.
Is he on that show as well? Yeah.
He is. Headlining. Derek Akaza.
To you, Matt.
No, I misunderstood this one completely, to be honest with you. I was going back through history looking at surprise knockouts that you was not expecting from fighters that you don't class as punchers.
Go on.
So you might Michael Nunn, Sumbu Kalambay. Pernell Whitaker was a better puncher, I think, than he was ever really given credit for. And I think in the current on the world scene now, you look at someone like Terence Crawford, Jaron Ennis, and they're very rarely classified as punchers.
Yeah.
Even though they're two of the best finishers in the sport.
Well, phenomenal on the stoppages.
You take people out, they might not be the biggest puncher, but they don't see the people don't see the punches coming because of the angles you might throw them on. That's why guys like that Pernell Whitaker stop people. And I think a lot of that was the angles and the speed. Round six, final round, Matt. What makes a great fight card?
You know what? What does make a great fight card? Right, there's a lot of talk, rightfully so, with this bill on February 22 that is topped by Beterbiev versus Bivol, and then you have got Daniel Dubois, Joseph Parker. We ain't got time in the 3 minutes to go through all of them, but I've got. Is that perfect, or is it too perfect, and is it too long? We all love boxing. I love boxing. But can you imagine and I hope I don't get it, imagine being the reporter trying to do on the whistle reports for all of those.
Yeah.
You'd need a month off afterwards. But I just think there is two really excellent bills. For me personally, that isn't the perfect bill because it's too long. I'd be really interested to hear what you guys think.
You know what? It's part of this Saudi thing. I think when they did, we wanted this to be the biggest, the best ever. So I think there's a lot of that. And I'll take your point. But you go back to the 90s, some of these mad cards Don King did. There was one, was it 94 or 95? I remember Meldrick Taylor, Chavez rematch.
Was that the rematches card?
Was that the rematches card? Trinidad got off the floor against Yuri Boy Campos. I think that was a rematch.
Terry Brown. Terry Norris,
Jesse James, Leisure, Ricardo Lopez are on it. And I think we've had these great cards before. So I know what you're saying, Matt, but I don't think it's too much for one night. I mean, it's one of the few Saturdays I've got off where I'm even thinking of missing a Fulham game, going down to London to stay at home. I'm undecided. Whereas before, there was the last Saudi card. I went to football and watched it on what I called the last two fights when I got back, and then watched for the others the next day. But this is one, I might even stay home. It's not too much for me. I think it's fantastic that
we
know enough about watching Sky, TNT, any channel. What we're watching at 7 o'clock at night, this isn't good enough. It's great to think 9 o'clock at night, we're going to have Daniel Dubois against Joseph Parker, and it's not even the main event.
But do you think there's a day, because they might all be great fights, but often they can get lost to the story of the main event.
Oh, yes.
So sometimes people's great performances, they don't get the exposure or the recognition as a consequence.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what do you reckon, John?
I agree with you, mate. If they all go the distance, you can tell which side Steve's on now, can't you? He's not actually working on our side. He's making the fight. Steve wants them all to go the distance so that he can get his kids out the next week again.
Which, oh, mate, I won't be mashing any of these kids, mate, I tell you.
If each one goes the distance, it's an eight-hour show. It's like a day at work. It's too much. It is too much. For fights over in Britain, I always thought it would be a really good idea to have four title fights, an area or English title fight, a British title fight, a ranking title fight, whether that's European or world, and then a world. And then on the undercard, you don't want all 50-50s because the night goes on too long. You want a couple of spectacular knockouts. You want maybe a kid getting a test and then an eight-rounder and then the four title fights. And I think that would be great for domestic shows. But
I think it's brilliant that all six are on the six, seven are on the same card. And if you go with that, there's also Bradley Ray's on fight. VIP's very own Bradley Ray. He's on. Yes. I'm guessing he's on first, so...
What's the pick of a show there? We've gone way up. We're finished now. But what's the pick of the?
Big old Beterbiev rematch.
Yeah, that's my fight of the year last year. Beterbiev Bivol. Yeah.
They're all quality, really. They are all quality. Beterbiev Bivol is like a hardcore boxing fan's wet dream, isn't it? That is just an absolute. Although there's a part of me that wonders if it's just going to be another nip and tuck.
I was just going to ask you, do you think it will be? Because quite often rematches disappoint, but because these two know each other so well and they're so skillful and so talented, will it go the opposite way, where they've both worked out the weaknesses and will try to exploit them? I can't work it out.
Possibly. I think I fancy Bivol in this one. Yeah. I think there was quite a wave of sympathy for him, wasn't there, after the first fight? I thought the decision was fine, and I thought, frankly, it could have been 116, 112 to either of them, and I wouldn't have had an argument because it was that kind of fight. But I'd probably just about favour Bivol, largely because of Beterbiev's age. But the one I like all of them, but Ortiz Madrimov is the one that I'm really looking forward to, and Dubois Parker as well. I mean, I'm a bit of a heavyweight junkie, I always have been. I'll. Interested to see if Dubois can do a job on Parker like he's been doing on some other heavyweights recently.
That confidence is there, isn't it?
You know what? I don't know.
I just wonder if it's gone a little bit too far, Daniel, at the moment.
I'll go back with Daniel to when early in his career, and I remember once I was doing an interview with him for Box Nation, and I asked him about heavyweights and other boxers, and he never had a clue about any fighter out there. It was just this thing about, he said, people tell me I should start learning about the guys above middleweight, but I don't know. And he was just, the innocence, well, John Spence been to the howling room and everything. And he just didn't know boxers. He was quite open about it. I just don't know other fighters.
Well, you both know it's difficult to get anything out of Daniel, isn't it? So I remember one day we were sat down at the Peacock, and it was quite hard work again. But I always liked it because he was so different. Daniel didn't care. He wasn't after camera time. And it made a nice change. I actually quite used to like it. And then out of the blue one day, he said, you're from Manchester, aren't you, John? I said, yeah. He said, tell me about the fires that have raged over the moors just outside Manchester. And I looked at him. I thought, how on earth does he know about that? And it just came completely out of the blue. From someone who never basically answered any question. It's the most bizarre question I've ever been asked by anyone. Yeah. There you go. A little Daniel Dubois.
There's some insight into Daniel Dubois. Well, I'll tell you what, Matt, it's been a pleasure having you on tonight.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Good luck with the opening bell, boxing scene and everything else you're doing.
Nice one. Thank you so much.
And hopefully I'll see you again soon, because we just don't see each other anymore.
Yeah, I think 2020, 2025, I'm safe to be going ringside again, I think.
All right, let's hope so. And John, thank you as always. This has been Bell to Bell, and we'll be back next week. Thanks, everyone, for watching or listening.